This episode is brought to you by Gin & Co, author website design specialists. If you want a beautiful and functional website to promote your books and brand, reach out to Gin today. His work includes tailored, expertly designed professional author websites. I finally have a website I'm proud to share. And we've got a special offer for Words and Nerds listeners. Reach out today and get a free domain name and website hosting for the first year. You can get their website essentials package, includes domain name, website hosting, backup and security, free for the first year with any website purchase. This is valued at $330 a year. Choose a website designed to bring your author brand to life. You can find more details about this special offer at ginand.co/wordsandnerds. Welcome to the 2024 series of the Words and Nerds podcast. I'm Danny B, author, publisher, and your podcast host. With over 1 million plays, thanks to you, listeners, readers, writers, creatives, teachers, librarians, and book lovers, thank you for coming along for the journey where we bring you relaxed and real conversations about writing and creativity. If you love an episode, you can leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram or Facebook at Danny V Words and Nerds Podcast. Or you can check out my brand new website designed by Gin & Co at dannyv.com.au. Welcome to the Words and Nerds podcast, where we bring literary goodness straight to your ears. Today, I welcome Ashley Barton, a children author and copywriter. She has worked in some of Australia's biggest publishing houses, running marketing and publicity campaigns. Ashley has previously published 5 successful and highly acclaimed picture books and a junior fiction series. Today, we're going to talk about the brand new picture book, amongst other things, Dinosaur in My Pocket. Welcome for the first time to the podcast, Ashley.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here, long-time listener.
I love that. I love the cover. I mean, we say don't judge books by its cover, but that's a lie. We always do. I really like the cover. It's kind of simple, but it's actually really cool and beautiful, and the colours are great, and I love the, you know, the little raised title. So it's a very cool cover. So can you start by giving us an elevator pitch as to what Dinosaur in My Pocket is about?
Yeah, of course. So Dinosaur in My Pocket is about a little boy called James who loves two things more than anything in the world, dinosaurs and miniatures. So when he goes on an excursion to a museum with his school and sees a miniature dinosaur in the gift shop, he can't help himself. He takes the dinosaur because he doesn't have any money. And as his guilt grows, so does the dinosaur until he can no longer hide it. So the growing dinosaur is a bit of a metaphor for that guilty conscience.
I love that. Although, you know, the growing dinosaur, troublesome, but also a little bit cool.
Yes.
Grows and grows and grows.
Exactly.
Now you have little kids. Is this like some kind of experience that you've had, or are you just trying to sort of show that you can sort of redeem yourself from mistakes that might happen in the future?
So not yet with my kids, but the character was named after my brother, who definitely
has a child. I love that.
So probably a little bit of real life inspiration, but I think I just kind of wanted to tell a story about we all make mistakes, but we can redeem them. We can redeem ourselves and fix our mistakes.
So. Yeah, I like that idea, and I also like the idea of, you know, wanting something and not always being able to have it, because we have such a culture of, you know, instant gratification. And so, you know, I think it's cool to teach kids that, well, sometimes you have to wait for things and earn things.
And earn them over time.
That's it. So did you ever get caught stealing anything when you were a kid, Ashley?
Oh, I was such a goody two-shoes. I never even had attention, not once.
I'll let you in on a secret. My friend and I, we went to the chemist, we were probably in very early high school, and we stole some badges and we went home wearing them thinking we were cool. And then the whole afternoon, it was like the dinosaur. We were so guilty and we were so sick with what we'd done. And I don't even know why we wanted them. We didn't even really want them. And so we walked back to the chemist and returned them and walked back home again.
Guilty conscience is a powerful thing.
So when I read this, I was like, oh yeah, metaphorically speaking, this happened to me when I was 12. So now James is a little bit younger.
motivated by karma. Like the other day I went to buy something at a store and they only charged me for one thing out of the two, and I went straight back to pay for it.
It is karma does get in your head, I think, and you know it has happened throughout our lives, so I think you know you sort of latch on to that.
Very real.
But it's not only just about, you know, the growing dinosaur as a metaphor for a guilty conscience. You've also made it really fun. So how did you combine the two things together?
Gosh, I don't even know. I think a lot of the fun comes from the illustrations. Blythe's done such a beautiful job at capturing the characters and what's going on. And I think she's got a lot of humor, like in the expressions on the dinosaur's face, like, they very subtly change throughout the story. So, I think the illustrations bring a lot of fun, and the colour palette she's gone with.
Beautiful. Yeah, it looks great. And I think also the fact that it's a dinosaur, you know, like if my badge had been growing as big, it wouldn't be as fun, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly. I think the dinosaur definitely does add an element of fun.
I do.
The, the idea started with when my eldest was a baby. He'd never slept. So I was always holding him or driving or trying to get him to sleep for any amount of time. And there was just this one day where I was stuck sitting in the chair in his room holding him while he slept. And I was staring at his onesie, which had a dinosaur in the pocket. And I just sat there thinking, why is that dinosaur in the pocket? What's it doing there? And then that led to the idea. So just the most random place for an idea
love
to come
that
from.
Delirious non-sleeping, yes, I get that. My oldest son, who's now 11, he didn't sleep at all when he was a baby either, so he's fine now, so there's hope. He sleeps very well, but it did take quite a long time. There was one point where I think I forgot my name because I was like, wow, I don't even care because I'm so tired. But I think you can get some of the most creative ideas from those times of, you know, lack of sleep or stress or those odd times when your brain, you know, isn't doing its normal thing.
Completely, yeah.
Do you find, do you find you get ideas at weird times?
I do. So I've got another series coming in June called Freddy Spectre Fact Collector, and I had the idea for that in the middle of the night. I just woke up one night and my brain was suddenly very awake and I thought of this idea and here we are. So
did you write it down or did you trust yourself to remember it in the morning?
I trusted myself to remember. So
that's a risk.
Yeah, it is a risk. Often I will need to write it down.
I love that. I love the idea of having that notepad. I never do have the notepad and pen by the bed, but I always think it's a really good idea.
It's true. Or you wake up and you put it in the notes app on your phone and then you're wide awake because you've had bright lights in
your
eyes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So like we were saying before, I like the idea that you can make mistakes. We're all going to make mistakes as kids, as adults. We're going to continue to do that, unfortunately. But it's about fixing the mistake and acknowledging that you've made a mistake and kind of not repeating that mistake, which I think is really important. So I think it's a really cool message to kids. And is that kind of how you imagined it being read? Because it can be read just for fun too, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think so. Yeah, a lot of the reviews so far, people are taking away that moral, but I didn't set out to write a moralistic story. I don't really like telling people what to do.
But it's just an idea. Like it's not, I don't feel like it's so didactic that you're telling people what to do.
Yeah, that's what some of the feedback has been as well, which has been really nice because I haven't been trying to be anyone over the head with a message or anything like that. Kind of felt incidental to the story, but it's been good.
I've actually found that, you know, by reading and writing picture books and reading lots of manuscripts lately, I'm actually thinking that that is kind of the sweet spot for a combination. Like the didactic books are great in the classroom, but your kids probably don't want you to read them when they're going to bed.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be reading them when I'm trying to get them to sleep. Yeah. But they're good, you know, for a purpose because all those things are really important. But then, you know, the funny books that are just for funny purpose, like I think they're great, but I think we're always trying to, you know, as parents, try to make our kids understand the world and be kinder and understand what's going on. And so I think, you know, this book and the kind of most well-received picture books are the ones that you can have fun but also have that layer of messaging behind it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think one of my favorite things about picture books is often they're about something, but they're about something else. So you kind of dress up an idea or a theme or a moral in a completely different story. And, you know, some people might get it and some people might not. And it doesn't really matter. Like it's cool that Pip can interpret things.
And what do you like about writing picture books?
It's a tricky question. I don't know. What do I like about writing picture books? I think they are a lot more challenging than people
absolutely
assume they are. You know, I think we've all heard someone say, oh, it's so short, it must be really easy to write a picture book.
Oh, but I just knocked it over in my lunch break. Exactly. I've never done that, by the way.
I don't think I have either. But I think with a picture book, the fact that it's short makes it more challenging because every single word matters. But I like how you can have fun, like with this one. So this is very different to the picture books I've published before. But with those ones, that was me wanting to write something that I couldn't find. So with the grandpa and grandma, what do you call your grandma, what do you call your grandpa, that came from me looking in a bookstore for a book for my dad for his first Father's Day as a grandfather. And I could only find grandpa or granddad, and he doesn't go by those names. And I thought, well, there must be so many other kids that don't use those names for their grandparents. Mm. So that led to that idea. And I think what's been special about that is it's been a book for so many different people. So that's one of the things I really love about pitch books, is that they can be for so many people. So lots of different kids, but also lots of different grown-ups. So every school talk I've been at, there's been a conversation in the staff room where everyone's sharing their grandparent names, and
I like really that. Nice.
So so that's completely different than this, but this one I really liked being able to have fun with a concept. And
and what does your dad call himself?
He's Nonno.
Nonno. Yeah, because my dad is an opop.
Oh, nice.
Because that's Dutch.
Don't think I have a friend of mine.
You have to write another one.
Well, the ending is open-ended so that it can include
but you're right, every time the kids try and find, you know, their Oprah a car, they can't, so it's just a happy, you know, Grandfather's Day or whatever, and they have to sort of cross it out and write Oprah. So,
yeah,
it is so good to honor.
My mum, she didn't want to be grandma or granny or anything like that. Her name's Ginny, so we call her Gin Gin. She's going to be fun at Grandparents' Day.
Gin Gin. Yeah, but it's kind of cool as well. It's kind of cool that you're able to keep that little bit of personal culture in your family and for your kids to have that. You know, I like that. I didn't want to lose my whole, you know, connection to that part of our family.
Yeah, exactly.
So you also write middle grade and picture books. So what's the difference? What's the process when you're writing both of them? What do you have to do differently? I mean, beside the word count, obviously.
Yeah, so I guess there's obviously a lot more time spent writing a middle grade, but I probably spend probably similar lengths of time thinking about the story. Mm-hmm. So with the dinosaur in my pocket, the baby I mentioned is now almost six. So I did have that idea so long ago, but it kind of needed time to, I can't think of the word.
Percolate.
Yeah, that word. Yeah, percolate in my brain.
Do you find that with picture books? I find that a lot. Like, I have this idea, but I'll try and write it and it's terrible.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, I just have to sit with it and sit with it and sit with it. Then all of a sudden, it could be 6 months, could be a year later, you'll go, oh, I'm ready to write that now. Exactly. It kind of like takes time to download in your brain.
It really does. And so I guess because it's, the idea is really important, the words are really important, so it can take a really long time to get it right. And I don't like to force writing.
Yeah,
so,
same. Yeah.
So with that one, that was like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years in the making, just from idea to being able to put what the story ended up is down on paper. Whereas middle grade, I think I really work much better with a deadline. So if someone tells me finish that, then I can finish it. So I can work faster at middle grade than I could at a picture book if I'm trying to think of the idea over time. And I like to say there's more plotting, but I guess you kind of do need to plot a picture book. But I suppose with middle grade, there's more threads and stuff to deal with, more characters. And I guess you can, you know, it's word count, but add more description and, you're not relying on illustrations, so
that's
a lot more of the story.
Yeah. And what word count are you working towards for middle grade generally?
So the Solomon Macaroni books that came out last year and the year before, they're around 55,000 words. And then the Freddy Spector that I mentioned before, that's a lot younger, so that's 12 to 14.
Okay, all right. So it's like a junior fiction.
Yeah. And then I've just finished another manuscript, which is completely different again because I can't pick a lane, which is sitting around 34.
Okay. So. Yeah. Yeah. I do hear that middle grade, they are lowering their word counts.
Okay.
So that's in general across publishers, which is interesting. But yeah, but I just want to touch on the staying in your lane because often people go, well, you are a picture book author. But yeah. Then you look at someone like Jackie French or Jack Heath who can move between genres brilliantly, you know,
up to adult as well. So
yeah, like Jack goes from, you know, cannibals and kill your husbands to write back to, you know, really great kids books. And as we know, Jackie French does the same. So, you know, I like the idea of there not being a lane because I think we're such multifaceted people that we have different ideas all the time. And if you, you know, can write a picture book, you might also be able to write a junior fiction or a middle grade or even an adult fiction. So what do you think about that whole, it's almost like for marketing purposes, and you've worked in marketing before, people want to say you are a crime writer or you are a picture book author. But what do you think about sort of going outside those lines as you do?
Well, I think it makes sense from a branding perspective to stay in a lane. And I understand it as a consumer and as someone with a marketing background, you know, like you think of your favorite authors when you think of one of their books coming out, you think, oh, I really like their last book. So you kind of want something in the same vein, but I just can't do it. My ideas are too scattered. So
yeah, I feel the same way. I feel the same way. Yeah. But I love the fact that my son and I, who's 11, we can both sit there and watch, read Jack Heath. Like, obviously, yeah. He's not.
See, that's really cool.
Obviously, he's not reading How to Kill Your Husbands or About the Cannibal.
Not yet.
Not yet. But he's reading his YA stuff. I know he's a very avid reader. So it's cool that we can both read Jack Heath and we can talk about, you know, him as an author. So I think that's pretty cool.
It is, and I think with kids' books as well, kids grow very quickly. So if you love a picture book author and then you grow a bit more and they've got a junior fiction ready for you,
that's
and then
right.
they've got a middle grade.
That's right. He keeps asking me, actually, when can I read Jack's adult books? I'm like, no, you're already reading above your age level what you should be reading. You're already reading YA. We're going to stop there for a while.
Yeah, not yet.
So when you're actually ready for YA, then we might look at going into adult.
That's a good plan. Kids read up, that's what I've been told.
Yeah, absolutely. Except, you know, when it comes to humour, I heard this, I was talking to Kate Temple the other day and she's absolutely right because she said, yeah, kids always read up unless it's a funny book, right? And I thought about my son who loves, you know, YA, who's read Wings of Fire and he's, you know, Hunger Games and all that kind of stuff, but he'll always, when he's gone to bed, go back to Wimpy Kid because it's hilarious.
How funny.
I know. So I love that idea that humour crosses, you know, all of those age barriers. So I thought that was really cool and I'd not thought about that before.
It makes sense. We do the same thing with movies. Like,
yeah.
Humour movies, people can watch at any age.
It's absolutely.
Depending on humour, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, kids' movies these days are so much more interesting for adults than they used to be. You used to sit and go, oh, I've got to sit and watch this film. But now you're like, oh, this is actually funny on a number of levels. So, I don't mind that. Now, you worked in publishing, as we talked about, in marketing publicity. What have you learned? I mean, it's interesting having different perspectives of the industry, I think, because many people, I guess, just have the one as a writer or an illustrator, or they work in publishing. And, you know, there's a few of us who have these multifaceted sort of perspectives. What have you learned about writing through working in publishing?
Well, about writing, I don't know. I've learned a lot about how a book gets made and all the people that are involved in the process and what happens once the book is finished. So obviously marketing publicity, you're working with the finished product.
Yep.
So I didn't work a lot with the editorial team or the publishing team. So not a lot about the process of the book being written and being edited, but more at the end. But it was interesting being involved in like the acquisitions process and seeing what publishers look for. And stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know, not so much learning about writing, but definitely learning about what happens.
Yeah, which is cool, right? And even, you know, picture books, like you said, sometimes people underestimate how hard it is to put it together, like the time and love and expertise that goes into putting into a picture book. Like that was something that really was a huge pleasant surprise for me.
It's a really long process. So, you know, I get asked by kids at school talks all the time, how long does it take? Like, it can take 2 years. It
yeah.
can take a long time.
Absolutely. Because they're like, oh, about a month.
And I was talking to a friend about, you know, having to do things so far in advance the other day because publishers have schedules and their slots fill up. So, you know, like a publisher might have already signed all the spots they have available for next year.
That's right.
So I have to always think,
yeah,
well, what about the year after?
Yeah.
Really work far in advance.
Yeah, you do. And it's hard. And I think, you know, in publicity and marketing, that must have been hard as well, because there's always something hot and then people want to write what's hot. But in 2 years, that's a thing of the past.
Yeah, exactly. So how do you keep trends going?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Now, I find publicity and marketing very hard, particularly with kids' books. A lot of the print media has gone. Social media is kind of like a bit saturated, and also we're sort of speaking into the void of the converted. You know, I don't think we're reaching people outside our gorgeous little, you know, kid-lit bubble, which is great, but they're already converted. So was there something when you worked in marketing and publicity, something that you found really worked well, or you think authors should be doing when they have a new book come out?
I think like one of the biggest things that no one can do anything about from like as an author is the passion in-house. Mm-hmm. So if a publishing house gets behind the book, that kind of that passion really feeds through. So like the if it's a really good book, that'll help as well. So one example is the Nevermore series by Jessica Townsend. So that everyone in-house was so passionate about that book, and then that fed through to the publishing industry. And I think I'm not saying that's why the book was successful, because it's a really, really great series. But I think that definitely helped, like that in-house excitement really feeds through. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as an author, my philosophy as someone who was once a book publicist and worked really, really hard to get opportunities for authors is to just say yes to every opportunity.
Yeah.
Because they're so few and far between these days. It's really, really hard to get attention as a children's author, especially. Yes. So an adult author, it's difficult, but then as a children's author, it's even more difficult. So your publicist at your publishing house has worked really, really hard. Say yes to whatever they're asking.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, especially when you're starting out, I think you have to do those smaller events that might only attract 20 kids or 5 kids, and then you've got to do the, you know, other things that might attract more, because I think it all adds up. You know, those 5 kids at this event, the 20 kids at this event, the 50 parents at this event, like I think cumulatively, I think in the end it all matters.
Exactly. And I always find you don't know where one opportunity will lead. So I did a school talk at a friend's school, and then one of the parents was a teacher at another school, and so they wanted me to come speak at their school.
Yeah.
So everything you do, yeah, it snowballs. So yeah, definitely think any opportunity you can do is worthwhile.
It's hard going though, isn't it? It's always so hard getting books out. It is. It's exciting, and then it's exhausting, and then it's like you don't even know sometimes what's working. You know, like what's working, what's not. So it's almost like you have to throw everything at it and hope something sticks.
Exactly.
Do you have a writing process? So are you more of a pantser or a plotter or somewhere in between?
I'm definitely a pantser by nature, but there are times when I've been forced into plotting, you know, based on if I've pitched something off a proposal and they need to know how I see the story playing out.
Yeah.
So I find that hard, and I will deviate from my plot. But yeah, I like to see where the writing goes.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah, totally. I'm a total pantser, and I'll try and plot, especially with longer word counts, because sometimes I just get lost somewhere in the middle. But every time I plot, it just, like, it's so lame, the ideas.
They don't sound good when they just
don't sound good. And then I just get bored because I already know what's going to happen. So I find the writing really exciting when I'm kind of just smashing through it and going, oh, this could happen and this could happen, which makes for really hard editing, because you've got to go back and go, oh, these things don't connect, or this idea in the beginning doesn't work with the end. But the process of writing it, I think for me, the writing's better when I work fast and pantsing it.
I agree. I'm just really bad at admin in general. I really hate admin. So when I see people post on Instagram their manuscripts with post-it notes, or they've got like a big, you know.
I've tried. Doesn't work for me.
Neither.
Right. doesn't work. And like you said, the ideas are never as good in my brain on the post-it note. So I just figure if I just keep them all in my brain, they're much better than when I put them on the page.
Yeah,
but it's funny, so I've talked to a lot of people about writing process, and it's almost like pantsers want to be plotters and plotters want to be pantsers, but it's almost like you just are what you are and you just have to work with that.
The grass is greener.
I know some people who can go to and fro, but yeah, my brain doesn't operate that way. Now, a question I ask all the guests, as you well know, if you've been listening for a while, is why do you write?
Gosh, I was thinking about this today, actually, and I think I just write because I love it so much. I don't know. It's all I really want to do. Love connecting with readers. And I just, when I was a kid, I read all the time. I loved reading as a child. I still love reading, obviously, but I just read heaps and heaps when I was a kid. And I think it really shaped a lot of the way my mind works and the things I think as an adult and even my storytelling now. So I think especially, you know, writing for kids, being able to be that person for someone else is quite exciting.
Yeah. I love just the always, idea of that. Yeah.
Always getting hit with a random idea. So I don't know. I don't think I could stop if, if I tried.
Yeah. It is one of those things, isn't it? I was thinking today that someone asked me, I was doing some questions for an interview and I just thought, creativity is not a choice. You know, it's not something that you choose to do. It's something that you kind of are compelled to do and it kind of chooses you, you know, because I always find that, you know, if you're not being creative on a daily basis or as much as you can, like life isn't that fun. And I feel like I'm not enjoying myself that much.
Exactly. I used to, one of my bosses back in publishing said that to me once, that she felt like writing was a calling, like you either needed to do it and wanted to do it or you didn't. And I thought it was interesting coming from her because she was in the doesn't have the calling.
Yeah. I almost think, and for me too, it's all creative spaces. Like it's not just writing. You know, I look back in my life and I was just always doing something creative, whether it was a theater group or a pub band or whatever. It was always something creative. And even the podcast, you know, that came from wanting to create something when I was, you know, at home with two little babies under two. I thought, oh, this is something I can do at home.
That cool, like, concept of creating something out of nothing. I wouldn't be able to build a house or, you know, create some amazing sculpture. So it's
And I think creativity feeds creativity, so sometimes you just have that brain, we just need to be creating. And I guess that works across genres as well, because, you know, picture books and middle grade and junior fiction, it's still writing, but they're all very different types of writing.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, congratulations on this awesome book. I loved it. I thought it was really cool. Loved the cover, and I thought it was really, really cute and fun, but also had that really important message. I always think it's best to hide the veggies, and I thought that the veggies were definitely, you know, well hidden in this, so you could read it, you know.
Oh, that's good to know.
It's really fun. Or you could just look at it at that other message. And I love how at the end, you know, I won't give away, we don't do spoilers here, but how big the dinosaur gets and, you know, the trouble that causes and then what happens in the end. It's kind of cute. So thank you for chatting to me about all things picture books, writing, publicity, marketing, all the things that, you know, you have learned.
Yeah, I had so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.